You're listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Robert Bound. It's music time, and today we have a rather soulful show for you with lost recordings by Bette Davis, a new album by legendary American singer William Bell, and then we'll mix things up a bit with the latest release by sampling maestros The Avalanches. I'm joined in the studio by Will Hodgkinson, rock and pop critic for The Times. Will, welcome to the programme. It's been a while, Crocodile.
It has been a while, and I'm very pleased to be back.
Welcome back. He has got his dusty fingers have been flicking through some new and old releases, or some new releases by some older people.
That's right.
We're going to start with Bette Davis first. People will know the name Bette Davis Eyes, but it's not that Bette Davis, is it?
It's not that Bette Davis. It's Miles Davis's wife, and she was an absolutely fascinating character. She had a sort of her. These tracks come from just around the time she met Miles Davis and before. So she had a recording career, but not that significant. But the thing is that she was very, very strong, powerful figure. And she said to Miles Davis, listen, you need to move on from all this jazz.
Yeah.
And she introduced him to Jimi Hendrix and Funkadelic and everything else that was going on in the early 70s, Sly Stone. And that's when you get the albums like On the Corner and Bitches Brew and, you know, the kind of new Miles Davis of the early 70s, which is basically kind of funk rock jazz. So that's really had a lot down to her. And Miles Davis was very encouraging about her career up to a point. And
yes, this is the thing with Miles Davis.
Yeah, when it seemed like it was actually going a little bit too well.
Hang on, love.
Yeah, exactly. And they did the marriage didn't last long. But she released a handful of albums which are quite well known, sort of cult collector's classics.
Yeah.
But the exciting thing about this is that these are completely unearthed. No one's ever heard them before. And they were never released. And they're just absolutely great. And she made them with, I think Hugh Masekela was in there, who's an old boyfriend of hers. And the earliest one is called You Live, You Love, You Learn. And it doesn't sound... what she's famous for is this kind of dirty funk. But this is a very sweet song, a kind of sweet... If you know bands like The Fifth Dimension, it's that kind of symphonic soul pop sound, a slightly very light psychedelic sound of the late 60s.
Yeah.
And it's just fascinating that this kind of powerful figure, who is really very, not half as well known as she should have done, made all this other stuff, which even the hardcore collectors didn't know about.
This is incredible. Well, let's hear a cut from it. This is Live, Love, Learn, as advertised by Will Hodgkinson, Bette Davis. You live. That is a little bit of Live, Love, Learn from Bette Davis. It's an uncovered recording. It's called The Columbia Years, 1968 to 1969. The wife of Miles Davis. I could very happily stop the week right there.
It's lovely, isn't it?
Stop the week, I want to get off and just listen to that. What a gorgeous way to start
it. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
That's the most symphonic. The rest of it is a bit more funky, but if people know Miles Bette Davis, they'd be surprised at how gentle this stuff is. She was kind of had the bad girl image, you know, way before Rihanna and all the other bad girls that have come along. That was her thing. But this is much gentler. I mean, so many, and Prince was a huge fan. You know, he was very influential in a kind of very quiet way.
That had a sort of sound of a bit of sort of proto-Supremes to it as well. It had quite a kind
smooth,
of... Smooth. Yeah, very smooth.
Gentle and innocent.
Yeah.
Innocent, yeah. It's very sweet.
And so this is the thing. So in this is a light in the attic thing.
Yeah.
The legends of dusting off old things, representing them in a lovely way. What does this kind of look like? How does this present itself? How many discs do we have? What kind of line? The notes, is this a kind of big presentation? Is this a kind of let's look at this artist again kind of
well what
thing?
There is, so first of all, there aren't that many tracks, because this is all there is, and so there's only about 8 or 9 tracks, so it's a single album on vinyl or CD. But the way it's presented, as Light in the Attic always do, is beautiful, and these amazing pictures of Bette Davis, who just was a really, really stylish woman. She just looked fantastic. So, and also she's still alive. So there was an interview with her, and she's very reclusive these days, but they managed to coax her out to do this interview and recall, and, you know, and she just said, well, you know, it's, on the whole, it's good memories. Miles started getting a bit awkward after a while when he didn't like it that, you know, Jimi Hendrix was in love with me or whatever, you know, right. And that's the C'est la vie. You know, she was very reflective about it, and it's all in the liner notes, and it's just an object that you want to have. You know, it's a really nicely presented album.
She sounds like a kind of bit, she sounds like a sort of unlikely icon or a kind of forgotten icon.
She's a forgotten icon.
Like she stands for a lot of good things, actually.
Yeah, I think she does. Yeah, I think she does.
Okay, so that was Bette Davis. The album is called The Columbia Years, 1968 to 1969. Just the one of them, the Columbia year, perhaps.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's move it on then, Will. We're going to talk about William Bell now. Now, talk us through this guy. People will be familiar with one of his big tracks. What are you presenting for us today?
Here? William Bell is the guy who is he was at Stax, the famous Memphis label, and he was famous for "I Forgot to Be Your Lover" and "You Don't Miss Your Water," and he was the guy that sort of moved 60s soul into its adult phase. You know, these were songs for grown-ups. They're songs about relationships, songs about kind of that sort of sweet soul sound. But not for kids anymore, you know. And he was a pioneer of that, really, because that was more of a 70s thing, and these were 60s tracks. He's now 76. This is his first album of new material in almost 40 years. And it's really good. He's revisiting old tracks. So he did he wrote a very famous blues song for Albert King called "Born Under a Bad Sign," which is one of those songs that all roadhouse blues bands always play.
Every artist covered it.
Yeah, covers it, and it's a cliche. But it's nice to hear him doing it at the age of 76, because it's actually a song which is really about, you know, sort of hard luck, and it's, you know, at that point of life, it's quite, you know, it's kind of hard luck, but
believable. Then it's more believable the older you are.
Exactly.
When you have all this backstory, this history.
Right? Exactly. Yeah. So I don't think William Bell has had there's no kind of great tragedy to his life, but he's, again, you know, a reasonably well-known name who didn't quite get his dues, possibly because, unlike Otis Redding, he didn't die.
Yeah.
He didn't, you know, he wasn't an outrageous figure. He was quite a, you know, decent family guy.
Yeah, he didn't turn to the dark side.
Not really. No, he just kept on working. He's a songwriter, really. I mean, that's mainly what he did. He's essentially a backroom songwriter. But this is it's a really nice album, and it's also Stax has been revitalized, and so it's actually been released on Stax Records.
Nice. Yeah. Which is back with a vengeance.
Exactly.
If not with a vengeance. Certainly not with a whimper.
No, exactly.
Okay.
But it's here.
So here is William Bell, and this is "Born Under a Bad Sign."
I can't read. Didn't learn how to write. My whole life has been one big fight. Born under a bad sign. I've been down since I began to crawl. Oh, if it wasn't for real bad luck, I wouldn't have no luck at all.
"Born Under a Bad Sign," new from William Bell. We put "new" in inverted commas. It's, I guess it's a rehash of a song he wrote a long time ago. And it's from an album called "This Is Where I Live" on Stax Records. New William Bell, new Stax Records. It's all good stuff. Stax were always sort of played off against Motown? What were the kind of, how did the two of those kind of operate? Did they get on with each other? Were they very different sounds, different kind of production setups?
I think they're very different. Stax, well, they both had the idea that you had your house band, which is Booker T and the MGs for Stax, and that you bring in these musicians and you find people and you kind of, you know, it's like an in-house production service and it goes out there. But Motown was much more pop.
Yeah.
Stax was, you know, very southern.
Stax was all one, all done in one house, wasn't it?
It was
a house on which the sun never set, really. It was open all hours. People would turn up, record things, lay things down, leave. It was kind of just an open house.
It was until the race riots of 1968,
right.
And it was destroyed. And then Stax burnt down, and that was the end of it. So it had a really tragic, while Motown sort of flourished and went on to great things, and then sold, you know, moved up from Detroit to LA and became this kind of huge commercial entity with Diana Ross and so on becoming these massive stars. Stax was different. I mean, you know, you had Isaac Hayes, you had Booker T and the MGs, you had Otis Redding, big names in the 60s, but by the 70s it was over.
Yeah.
You know, and by the late 70s at least. And so it's been revitalized. It had a kind of, it's had a harder history, and it's a tougher. Also, it came from a very segregated place. And the great thing about Stax, you know, you had a band like Booker T and the MGs, they were mixed race.
Yeah.
Mid 60s, this was very unusual in the South. And it was a sort of safe place for it to go. So that's why it's so sad when, you know, the race riots hit and it was destroyed, because up until then that it had been music, which had been the sort of way through.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It was sort of colorblind music.
Exactly.
Actually.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you couldn't tell what color the guy playing on the record.
They didn't
was.
Care.
Yeah,
didn't care. If you could play bass well, then you're in.
Yeah. Okay, well, it's interesting stuff. William Bell carries a lot before him. This Is Where I Live is the new album from him, out on Stax Records. We're going to finish. We're going to go down under. We're going to hear from the Avalanches. What's taken this band so long to make a second LP?
16 years. Yeah. Well, I thought initially, like everyone, oh, well, they just didn't get their act together. It's a bit like the Stone Roses. But actually, yeah, it turns out to be not quite as sort of lackadaisical as that. Robbie Chater, it's really one guy and a band, as these things often are. Robbie Chater is the main guy, and he had a rare autoimmune disease for quite a lot of the 2000s, and so he was incapacitated, and there's that, and the fact that these are all samples, and in 2000, when they made Since I Left You, their debut, samples were quite easy to get. You know, you found some totally obscure record and took it, and yeah, it was all right. Now everyone is onto it, so you know, you take a sample, if you don't clear it, you're going to get sued. Is a lot of money to be made. So it was very, very difficult, because it's pretty much all made up of samples, and then they have guest singers and rappers coming on top of it, and they play instruments. But it's all based on this idea that you take this funny little sound and put it together. So I think it was that. I mean, I don't think for a moment that they're working on this for 16 years. That's not how things work.
But it doesn't sound like 16 years labour.
No, I don't think so.
In a good way.
Yeah.
Who wants to hear Chinese democracy?
Exactly. No, it's not. In fact, you put your finger on it. What's nice about it is that it doesn't feel laboured. It's actually quite a childlike record. It's fun. It's not tragic or heavy or sort of ponderous at all. It's just a kind of quite silly, really. And the reason I wanted to choose this track, Subways, is because it's based on a sample by a post-punk single by a girl who's either 10 or 12 when she recorded it, depending on who you believe. She said she was 10, but it's mostly gone down on record as 12. A girl called Chandra. And this is from New York in, I think, 1980. And you think, what? How did this little girl make this incredible track, which sounds like something Public Image might have made, or The Slits,
right,
or someone?
Yeah.
It's absolutely brilliant. And so they based it all on this. It's called Subways, and the sample is the song. The original song is called Subways. The song is called Subways, and it's all reconfigured, but it's essentially based around this one sample by Chandra.
Okay, that is Subways. It's new from Avalanches, from their new record, first one in 16 years. It's called Wildflower. So this album's got 22 tracks on it. Are we talking about little bridging, little tracks that are 30 seconds of funny stuff that link from one to the other, or have we got literally 22 3-minute pop songs?
I think there's probably maybe about 6 of those little interludes,
yeah,
just kind of funny little bits and pieces, or you know, some tracks they sort of return to and that kind of stuff. When I first listened to it, I thought, this is really hard work. I don't like this. It was just too much going on. But yeah, I've since loved it. I've really got into it. And it is a sort of overload. But it's somehow representing the modern age, because it feels like you've got something. You might have a bit of 30s calypso, and then a rapper, and then Subways, you know, this weird post-punk single. And it's all piling in. And there is a logic to it, and there is a method to the madness. And, you know, you get used to it. There are times, there's one song called Frankie Sinatra, which I felt was too jokey. I think that was the first single. But a lot of it, there's a song called Step Kids, which features Jennifer Herrema, who's the lead singer of Royal Trucks. It's a very cult American band, kind of sleaze rock band. And so you've got people like her, then you've got Biz Markie, the rapper. It's all over the place. But somehow, actually, once you get used to it, you think, yeah, there really is logic to this.
Fantastic stuff. Okay, deal with it, live with it, perhaps, for a little while.
Exactly.
It's called Wildflower. It's new from Avalanches. That is out now on XL Recordings. Before that, we heard new from William Bell, This Is Where I Live, on Stax. And we kicked it off with the Columbia years, 1968 to 1969, new from Bette Davis, or Unearthed from Bette Davis. That brings us to the end of today's Arts Review. Thanks very much to Will Hodgkins, and nice to see you again, Will.
And you.
You've been listening to The Monocle Arts Review with me, Robert Bound. My producer was Holly Fisher. Join us again at the same time tomorrow when we'll be talking TV. But for the time being, thanks for tuning in.